158, nays contre 133, 133.
I, Tom.
I, Tom.
Take you, Anthony.
Take you, Anthony.
To be my life partner, my spouse.
To be my life partner, my spouse.
To love and to cherish.
To love and to cherish.
As long as we both shall live.
As long as we both shall live.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Banned U.S. hate preacher diverts South African crusade to Botswana, college sports groups flee anti-LGBT North Carolina, and Canada's queer decade culminates in marriage equality. Those stories and more this week because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Carol Myers.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending September 17, 2016. A homophobic U.S. hate preacher has been barred from entering both South Africa and the U.K. Stephen Anderson and members of his Faithful Word Baptist Church of Tempe, Arizona, will not be allowed to travel to South Africa because, referencing the nation's Immigration Act, Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba explained that Anderson advocates social violence. The preacher infamously celebrated the June 12th Pulse Massacre in Orlando, Florida, that took the lives of 50 LGBT and queer-friendly souls and injured dozens more, telling his flock that there were now 50 less pedophiles in the world. A petition circulated in South Africa with more than 60,000 signatures called on the government to ban Anderson's entry into the country. It was supported by a bulging dossier on his anti-queer statements and actions, compiled by Gay SA Radio. Anderson has also called on God to rip out Caitlyn Jenner's heart and for the mass execution of gay people to create an AIDS-free world.
Those were apparently more than enough reasons for authorities in the United Kingdom to also display the unwelcome mat for Anderson and his flock. In a YouTube posting, Anderson said that he was originally supposed to take a flight earlier this week to Johannesburg with a connecting stop in London. However, he says, they tell me that the United Kingdom has banned me from entering the country and that not only am I banned from the UK, but I can't even go to the London airport. Since he also can't go to South Africa, Anderson has now set his sights on Botswana, which he called a way more receptive place for his message. LGBT people are challenged in that southern African country by both entrenched societal homophobia and official hostility. But just this year, an appeals court ruled against the government, deciding that an LGBT advocacy group should be allowed to register as an NGO. That rare legal victory hasn't dissuaded Anderson, however. Stand by for reports of multitudes saved in Botswana, he predicted on his Facebook page, where religious freedom still exists.
In the U.S. itself, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or NCAA, has pulled 7 major national championship events out of North Carolina because of the Tar Heel State's notorious HB2. That law bans LGBT civil rights and requires trans people to use birth certificate-based bathrooms. The NBA announced a few weeks ago that it was relocating professional basketball's 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans because of HB2. A diverse number of entertainers and organizations are also boycotting the state, and millions of tourism dollars have already been lost. This week's statement from the NCAA's Board of Governors cited the association's commitment to fairness and inclusion and said that NCAA championships and events must promote an inclusive atmosphere for all college athletes, coaches, administrators, and fans. Specifics about where each championship event will relocate have yet to be announced, but they include a National Women's Soccer Championship, the first and second rounds of the men's basketball tournament known as March Madness, a women's golf championship, and men's and women's tennis championships.
One of the major regional collegiate sports associations, the Atlantic Coast Conference, said soon after the NCAA's announcement that it, too, would be yanking its championship games for the upcoming season out of North Carolina because of HB2. The state is losing conference championship games for baseball, women's soccer, football, men's and women's swimming and diving, women's basketball, men's and women's tennis, and men's and women's golf. 15 universities make up the Atlantic Coast Conference, including Clemson, Duke, Florida State, and the University of North Carolina. Losing the conference's football championship game alone, according to some sources, will cost the state an estimated $32 million tourism dollars.
The North Carolina legislature's dominant Republican majority and Governor Pat McCrory, who's locked in a tight reelection campaign, have been under incessant pressure to repeal HB2. For his part, McCrory either doesn't understand or willfully refuses to understand what HB2 does, reducing it just to what he calls a common sense law, requiring people to use appropriate public restrooms. According to a September 16th report in the Charlotte Observer, the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association is trying to broker a deal to end the financial bloodletting. They say McCrory is willing to call state lawmakers into special session to repeal HB2, but only after the Charlotte City Council undoes what prompted the creation of HB2 in the first place and repeal its local anti-discrimination ordinance. The Charlotte Ordinance had extended anti-discrimination protections to LGBT people and allowed trans people to use the bathrooms and locker rooms of the gender with which they identify. It's not even clear if there would be enough votes on the Charlotte City Council to overturn the city's LGBT anti-bias protections. A repeal effort in May lost by a vote of 7-4. Mayor Jennifer Roberts has also been an outspoken opponent of HB2. It would take 7 council votes to override what would be her probable veto if Charlotte lawmakers even approve a repeal measure.
In other news, transgender U.S. Army private Chelsea Manning will finally be getting the gender reassignment surgery she's been asking for since her incarceration more than 3 years ago. Then known as Bradley Manning, the former intelligence analyst in Iraq was sentenced in 2013 to 35 years in the brig at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, after a military court convicted her of providing more than 700,000 documents, videos, diplomatic cables, and battlefield accounts to the anti-secrecy group WikiLeaks. The case has been called the biggest breach of classified materials in U.S. history. She's reviled by some as a traitor and celebrated by others as a courageous whistleblower. A deeply depressed Manning was reported in July to have attempted suicide, and last week she announced that she was going on a hunger strike until she got the transition treatment she needed. Happily, the hunger strike ended after 5 days. Manning's ACLU attorneys announced on September 13th that the Army would allow her to receive gender transition surgery that her psychologist had recommended in April. They quoted Manning as saying that, "This is all that I wanted, for them to let me be me." Proudly trans ACLU staff attorney Chase Strangio said in the announcement that while doctors had also recommended that Manning be allowed to follow female hair grooming standards as part of her treatment for gender dysphoria, the government plans to still enforce male hair standards on her. But Manning will become the first transgender U.S. soldier to ever receive reassignment surgery in prison.
In sadder news, 3-time Pulitzer Prize-winning openly gay American playwright Edward Albee has died at the age of 88. His personal assistant reported the passing on September 16th, though no cause of death was immediately announced. As the Associated Press noted, in more than 30 plays, Albee skewered such mainstays of American culture as marriage, child-rearing, religion, and upper-class comforts. He's probably best known for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the Tony Award-winning play that opened on Broadway in 1962. An Oscar-winning film version starring Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton followed a few years later. The play combined hilarious dark humor and pathos as the lead characters often viciously turn on each other but eventually reconcile. Despite the frequently eviscerating dialogue, fit for a queen, Albee always denied rumors that the two heterosexual couples featured in the play were originally written as gay men.
George and Martha. Sad, sad, sad.
Sculptor Jonathan Thomas, described by the AP as Albee's longtime companion, died in 2005. I don't like the idea of getting older and older because there's meant to be a time when that has to stop, Albie said in 2001. Dying strikes me as being a great waste of time.
And finally, the titular star of the long-running Logo TV series RuPaul's Drag Race has won his first Emmy Award. As the outstanding host for a reality or reality competition program, RuPaul Charles bested fellow out celebrities Jane Lynch of Hollywood Game Night and Tim Gunn of Project Runway, in addition to American Idol's Ryan Seacrest and Dancing with the Stars' Tom Bergeron. RuPaul seemed to be genuinely surprised by the win at the Creative Arts Emmy Awards on September 11th. He credited the contestants for the success of his show during a backstage interview with E! Entertainment Television.
This is so special for me because of the 100-plus girls who have so graciously told their stories on our show and who have traveled the world as ambassadors of dancing to the beat of a different drummer. And for young people around the world who see our show in Italy or South Africa or Australia or Japan, who know now that there's a way to navigate this life successfully on your own terms.
RuPaul's Drag Race premiered on Logo in 2009. The series was renewed for a 9th season earlier this year. RuPaul may now rue what he said a few years ago. I'd rather have an enema than have an Emmy.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 17th, 2016. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Carol Myers.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Bronnie Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
Now I'm fascinated.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
And that's the truth.
I moved here in 1990 when I was 17. In 1993, I started a radio show called Queer FM on CITR. I had no idea at the time, but I was about to document one of the most phenomenal decades in the struggle for queer equality, 1995 to 2005. It was the decade we went from no constitutional human rights to full legal marriage.
That's how veteran This Way Out Vancouver correspondent Heather Kitching told her own story in an award-winning CITR documentary, Queer Decade, 1995 to 2005. We've aired her stories about those times the last several weeks, including the legal battles that established LGBT rights, redefined the meaning of spouse, ended censorship by Canadian customs agents, and lifted the bans on queer-positive books in public schools. In this week's romantic conclusion, the movement's engagement ends with a march down the aisle.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gee, I really love you and we're gonna...
By 2003, the momentum had shifted in our favor. Courts in Ontario and Quebec had already made same-sex marriage legal, but the rulings wouldn't take effect until July 12, 2004. That was because the court wanted to give governments time to do things like change paperwork and possibly, you know, legalize same-sex divorce, just in case. The litigants in BC were optimistic that our court would rule the same way. This is one of their lawyers, Joe Arve, speaking on the day of the decision.
Thank you for coming to the press conference. We're pleased to report that the British Columbia Court of Appeal, the first Court of Appeal in Canada, has ruled that the federal common law bar that the federal common law that restricts same-sex couples from marrying is unconstitutional. It was a unanimous decision. It was a definitive decision. It's a decision we're very, very pleased with. So as a practical matter, what this decision means is that gay and lesbians can now marry in Canada, although their right to marry won't be allowed until July 2004.
That press conference took place on May 1st, 2003. On June 10th, the Ontario Court of Appeal ruled that same-sex couples in that province could start marrying immediately. So the BC couples went back to the court and asked for the right to do the same. On July 8th, they were back at the courthouse waiting for that decision. Here's Tim Stevenson.
I'm the first openly gay person who was ordained in any church in Canada, in the United Church of Canada. When I had my own church, and I had one for 4 years in Burnaby before I went into politics, a couple came to me, and this would be, you know, way back in like 1994, 1995. And then they said they wanted to have a marriage ceremony or a blessing. And would I do that? And I said, sure. And then many years later, all of a sudden I got a call from Tom and Anthony saying that they were in this court procedure and there was a decision that was going to be made. And they wanted me to come if the decision was affirmative from the courts and marry them on the steps of the courthouse immediately after the decision. So I said, sure, I'll do that. Now, by this time, I'm a city councilor in Vancouver. And so we went to the courthouse to wait. And I don't know what time, but the judge made his ruling and said that marriages would be allowed in British Columbia. Huge cheers and so on. And we went outside onto the steps of the courthouse. And there must have been, 100 reporters and cameras. I mean, we're just totally surrounded. Rather odd kind of way to do a marriage. You know, didn't feel very religious, you know.
So I'd ask now that you turn and face one another. And Tom, if you would repeat after me. In the presence of God and before these witnesses.
In the presence of God and before these witnesses.
I, Tom.
Take you, Anthony.
To be my life partner, my spouse. To have and to hold from this day forward. For better, for worse.
For richer, for poorer.
In sickness and in health. In joy and in sorrow. To love and to cherish. As long as we both shall live.
As long as we both shall live.
And now, the regular book says that the man and woman may kiss, the two men may kiss.
Yeah.
Anyway, I did that marriage, and they were married, and that was the first marriage in British Columbia.
So couples launch court cases in other Canadian provinces and territories, trying to open the door to same-sex marriage in those regions. In all, we racked up 11 court victories in 9 provinces and territories. Meanwhile, the federal government announced it would give up the fight. It would not appeal to the Supreme Court of Canada. Instead, it would draft legislation to legalize same-sex marriage nationwide. It was around this time that a group called Canadians for Equal Marriage really rose to prominence.
My name is Mary Wu Sims, and I'm the former Chief Human Rights Commissioner for British Columbia. Canadians for Equal Marriage was really a broad public interest group that formed out of those fights across the country for relationship recognition and the right to marry, and included at the very beginning EGAL Canada, but then grew to include a whole range of people, including like the PFLAG, the Canadian Labor Congress, Chinese Canadian National Congress, the Canadian Federation of Students. I think having community groups that are not necessarily linked with the GLBT community come out in favor of our right to marry was very, very significant. People from the Sikh community, people from Jewish community, people from various faiths as well as racialized communities come out and speak in favor of equal marriage and why it was important was, I think, one of the huge achievements of the movement.
And that brings us to June 28, 2005, the day the marriage bill saw its final vote in the House of Commons. Queers in Vancouver were at the Pump Jack pub watching it on CPAC on the big screen TV.
The question is the following one. Mr. Cotton, seconded by Mr. Peterson, moved that Bill C-38, an act respecting certain aspects of legal capacity for marriage for civil purposes, be now read a third time and do pass. In favor of the motion, will please rise.
The crowd cheered when our supporters stood up to cast their votes. They booed when our opponents voted against us. And then it happened.
Nays contre
3 myself. In my lifetime, I've gone from it being a criminal act in Canada to today is huge. We've really achieved so much in such a small period of time.
My name is Murray Corin. I've been making presentations around issues to do with queer education and queers in the public education system. That decade solidified so many things as far as our rights are concerned, but also in how our community came together to support one another. Demonstration after demonstration, rally after rally around education, around marriage and so on, I think brought us together in ways that really solidified who we are as people. And that makes me very, very proud.
I keep not wanting to be complacent about it and keep reminding ourselves and myself of the struggles that continue by others in our community, those who are Aboriginal, those who are poor, those who have disabilities. They also need our assistance, so I don't want us to be forgetful of them.
Deal my own deck.
1995 to 2005 was written and produced by me, Heather Kitching. Madeline Taylor engineered the interviews. Queer Decade uses music composed by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Details are at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. The compositions are called Shades of Spring, Walking Along, Spellbound, Acid Jazz, Chipperdoodle Volume 2, EDM Detection Mode, Ether Disco, Pyro Flow, Danger Storm, Lightness Dawn, Babylon, Son of a Rocket, String Disco, Your Call, and Basement Floor. Queer Decade is a production of CITR Radio and the UBC Centennial Initiatives Fund.
You can follow Heather Kitching on Twitter at Radio Kitching. And if queer history grabs you, come grab this collection.
Attention all LGBT, U.S. history buffs, collectors, and listener supporters.
You can now own a very special edition of This Way Out.
Here's a taste.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Children born today will grow up in a world without DOMA.
This is social engineering by a court.
Is this Jim?
Yes, it is, Mr. President.
Congratulations.
Today, some of the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history.
It's the day I finally get to look at the man that I love and finally say, will you please marry me?
From outlaws to in-laws traces the legal evolution of the U.S. Supreme Court.
From the decriminalization of private consensual adult gay sex in 2003 to making marriage equality the law of the land in 2015.
This special edition features the voices of dozens of equality advocates over those years who made the journey possible.
Despite always outspoken opposition along the way.
From outlaws to in-laws also includes a wide variety of thematic music.
You'll find all the info you need about this very special edition of This Way Out at
thiswayout.org.
Well, isn't that special?
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Carol Myers, John Dyer V, and Heather Kitching contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener supporters, for making this show possible. Check out the latest program information and a lot more at thiswayout.org. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Plains FM, Christchurch, New Zealand, WCRS, Columbus, Ohio, KSOW, College Grove, Oregon, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.